Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 226 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah. What's up?
Well, a lot is up. We have a lot to get to today. We're talking about one of our favorite things, and that is time management and productivity, a topic really you can never revisit too many times.
No, we've always got time to talk about time.
I mean, this is like the elusive thing that I think moms are...
No one feels like they have enough of, right?
Yeah. And everybody feels like if I could just, you know, land on the right time management, you know, magic pill. And I don't think there is one. So that's why we can talk about it every, you know, couple times a year on the podcast. So specifically today, we're going to kind of look at ways to find more pockets of time in the schedule you already have. And that applies to everybody from stay-at-home moms to working full-time, because we all have pockets of time in our existing schedules that could probably be used differently or maybe looked at from a different lens. And then we're also, I'm excited to hear from you on this. In the second half, we're going to talk about really, I mean, you made the point, we can't make more time. There's only so many hours in the day. But when there's a priority for you and you need more than that 15-minute pocket, how do we actually create blocks of time for the things that are really important?
Yes.
You're going to tell me how to do that, right?
Well, I'm going to tell you what I'm working on.
Yeah.
So how about that? Is that good enough?
That sounds good. All right, let's take a quick break and we will get into it.
Well, Sarah, even my kids are finally back in school now, so it must really be September. And that means the homework is starting, the reading logs, the whole deal.
Yep. And our amazing sponsor, Epic, makes it easy to keep great books at your kids' fingertips for both pleasure reading and those school assignments. Epic is actually being used in over 90% of U.S. elementary schools. But even if yours isn't one of them, we're going to get you 2 months free and your kids can start using it today.
So if you're not familiar, Epic is the leading digital library for kids 12 and under. You download the app on a tablet or pull it up in a browser, and your kids can access more than 35,000 ebooks, audiobooks, and read-to-me books. They've got a ton of nonfiction subjects like science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics, which feature learning content aligned with Common Core standards, and everything your kids access is handpicked by the expert team so they can read and learn in a safe, age-appropriate, kid-friendly environment.
I love that my kids each have their own profile on Epic and they can search for what they're into all on their own. We also use it kind of like screen entertainment that doesn't really count, because there are fun DIY videos and books about crafting and jokes and other cute stuff that my kids totally geek out over.
Epic is normally $7.99 a month, which is a great deal, but we've partnered with them to get our listeners 2 months for free. So you're going to use the code MOMHOUR when you sign up for an Epic subscription at getepic.com. And then you're going to get your 2 months totally free. Again, go to getepic.com, use promo code MOMHOUR, and get Epic for 2 months for free.
Megan, I have to say, I have a little bit of a shopping addiction with our affiliate partner, Jane.com. Why? Why is this app so fun to browse?
I don't know, but when you said that, I just had to like reach for my phone because I haven't looked at Jane today yet.
So you guys know I'm a sucker for good deals, but I also care about quality. So I want to vouch for a few of my recent Jane purchases. Jane is a daily deal site. So some of these deals I'm going to mention have expired, but the really cool thing is these deals do come up again. So I'll link them up in the show notes and you can head over and favorite them and you'll be notified when they come up again. So I got these wide leg jeans for less than $30 recently, and I love them. They're so cute. I also have these shoes. They're called the London Flats, also less than $30. And they are a perfect little, almost like half booty like shoe for early fall. I might actually get them in another color.
Yeah. I have to say with Jane, I often go back and like check in later and get the thing I loved in a different color.
Totally.
It's so great. And yes, your jeans and shoes are so cute. Jane also has really cute seasonal stuff. So if you're excited for the transition to fall, go check out their deals on home decor. We've talked about how much I love swapping out throw pillows during the change of season. And they have these really cool leather and block print pillow covers that would look great on my gray sofa.
Oh yeah, those are so cute. I was eyeing those too. Well, you can shop our link at themomhour.com/Jane, and you'll be helping to support the podcast with your purchase. Again, head to themomhour.com/Jane to start shopping for great daily deals from jane.com.
Okay, Sarah. So for this first section, we're talking about time found, finding time. time you have right now, but maybe isn't being harnessed to its fullest. Maybe you don't even recognize it as usable time. I think we have all these like little bits of time that we end up filling with, I guess, just kind of filler activity, like scrolling Instagram,
for example.
Which is great if you're doing it with intention, but sometimes can suck up a lot more time than we think. So I know you've got a tip about this.
Yeah. Well, and I first want to say that it's a big adjustment if you have been used to having longer blocks of time. And maybe that means before you had kids, or maybe you were working in an office full time and you had more control over your schedule. But anytime you change up how your time works, it can feel like the rug got pulled out from under you. So
yeah.
I just want to kind of acknowledge that. And I think some people are more sensitive to routine change than others. I noticed that with my kids. So if it's really kind of like upsetting to you to have your schedule change drastically, just know I don't think you're alone. I think that's a really normal thing. But one thing that it took me a long time to get used to was seeing increments of time increasingly smaller that I had to get anything done. So one tip I think that is helpful is if you have recurring windows of time that are 10 minutes or greater. And by what I mean by recurring is, of course, we sometimes find ourselves standing in line somewhere for 10 minutes, but you didn't necessarily know that was going to happen. The ones that I think about are the ones that happen sort of predictably. So you're always in the school car line every day for 15 minutes parked safely. Maybe that's a time, that's now a block of time that could be used for something. You're nursing a baby. You know that you're going to be sitting in a rocker for, you know, 15, 20, 45 minutes several times a day. So I think training yourself to think of those smaller increments of time as potential. And I want to make it clear, I don't mean potential for like knocking items off your to-do list in a crazy type A, you know, productivity person way. It could be that those 10-minute windows are for mindfulness and meditation. It could be that they're for reading for pleasure. So just starting to train yourself to think of those smaller windows of time as a thing that could be used for something, which I think is a big shift for a lot of us.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk a lot on the show about things that we used to do before we became moms, and then we just kind of stopped doing. And so much of that is habit. Reading for pleasure is a great example. Like if I don't set my life up in such a way that I have a book within arm's reach,
yes,
a light source with which to read if it's nighttime, right? And then like a time that I'm not passing out or otherwise distracted, it won't happen. But the minute I start, like when I set myself up for those things, even if they're only happening 10 minutes at a time, they count. And then the nice thing about that is then you've done it for 10 minutes. Now you're thinking the next time you have 10 minutes, like, oh, maybe I could fit reading in here too, or whatever it is for you. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's journaling. Maybe it's shutting your eyes and just not doing anything for 10 minutes. But like there probably are more windows than you think that happen all the time. But I also want to throw a shout out for spontaneous windows of time because those tend to happen maybe even more for moms. I'm thinking of baby usually wakes up from their nap at 2, but today for whatever random reason, they sleep until 2:10. I know that when I was in that situation where I had napping kids, I would kind of start expecting them to get up. And then if they didn't, I would feel at loose ends, like be kind of standing around going, oh, well, what do I do? Do I vacuum? No, that's a bad idea. Like I wouldn't have any ideas at the top of my head. So back when I was in that stage, and my time is much more predictable now and I have longer periods, and that actually can create some challenges we'll talk about a little bit later. But I used to have lists of things I could do in 5, 10, or 15 minutes posted to my computer, posted like next to my bed, which is where I worked for a long time, like just wherever I knew I would be if that opportunity popped up, I could look at it and without having to spend any time thinking, without having to spin my wheels, I'd go, oh, 5 minutes, I can send an email, or 10 minutes, I can go tidy up the kitchen. Like whatever it was, I didn't have to spend the additional energy deciding what to do, which can take all the time you have.
Yeah, I like the idea of a concrete list too, because I know we all have our go-tos that we return to. For example, I will just wander over to the sink and do dishes. I don't need to be reminded for that one. I like to do dishes. I'll fill a 5 or 10 minute window with tidying up in that way. But it would never occur to me to say, wipe down a shelf of the fridge in that same 5 minutes. Do you know what I mean? So we have our filler activities that probably get in a rut. Whereas if you made your list, there'd be things that I really would need to say, like, oh yeah, I could go through this stack of junk mail, and you know.
Right. Cause you wouldn't think of that on your own.
Yeah.
And then, so the junk mail pile gets higher and higher, and your sink is still always just about the same cleanliness, right?
And I'm going to get to the
dishes.
There's
only so much you can improve on it.
And I'm going to get to it anyway. So I like that a lot. Well, my next tip is to pair activities that go well together and do it with intention. I think intentionality is going to be kind of a theme of this episode. Yeah. So I'm thinking of things, a lot of times when we're strapped for time, we miss out on things like catching up with friends on the phone or reading, listening to audiobooks. So I'm a big fan of pairing two things together that naturally go well together. And I know you're going to talk a little more about multitasking, but I'm more thinking of I can call a good friend and have a good friend catch up while walking the dog, for example. That's kind of an obvious one. But I might also be able to listen to an audiobook while I fold laundry. And if you've never, if your time was previously yours in a much more expansive way, you may never have had to think of this idea of pairing, but it can actually be really fun, I think, and you can get really creative with it. They don't have to be, all it has to be is two things that sort of match up well together. And then you end up at the end of that 30 minutes or whatever, you're kind of doubly satisfied.
I have a habit of pacing and when I'm on the phone. And so one day I was like, I mean, I don't remember when I decided to start doing this, like 10 years ago, maybe. Like, what if I just cleaned when I was on the phone? And I got off the phone and looked around my house and it was spotless. And I didn't remember doing it. It was the craziest thing. So yes, it does help the time go by, but it also, I don't know, like then you've done this thing, like talk to your friend or whatever else it is that you really, you know, that you're wanting to do with your brain. And we're calling it pairing, but it is multitasking, right? Mm-hmm. And multitasking gets a bad rap, which is not fair. I mean, yes, I get the whole idea, like when you're washing the dishes, just be washing the dishes and like really concentrate on how it feels to be washing the dishes. That sounds amazing. If we can all have the available time in our day to treat something like washing the dishes as a meditation every single time we do it. I just don't think that's the reality of most moms with small kids. So, I mean, maybe moms at all, but especially if you've got little ones. I think the thing that I've noticed is like where multitasking becomes problematic is when you're trying to pair two activities that like require the same executive function or have competing goals. So if you're trying to read an article and trying to listen to your kids tell you about their day out of one ear, that's not going to work. You're trying to information gather from the article and you're trying to information gather from your kid. And you can't do both of those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. Or if the goals compete. So like, let's say you could walk just for fitness or because your dog needs a walk. But you could walk because you want a chance for some quiet, you want to get in nature, you want to meditate. So if you listen to a podcast, if you're walking for fitness, fantastic. If you listen to a podcast, but you're walking to get out in nature and meditate, that's totally like those things are clashing, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're having someone talking in your ears the whole time. You're missing what's going on around you. So I don't think it has to be one or the other or all or nothing. Like sometimes I'll go walk quietly for 15 minutes and then turn on my podcast or vice versa. So you know, another thing about that is I think it's so normal to find yourself getting off track and relying too much on, I guess, unintentional multitasking or unhealthy multitasking. This just happened to me. I was in this really hectic time of my life and I realized my kids kept saying, "You just asked me that," or "I already told you that." And I thought about it and I realized it was because when I get frazzled, I tend to try to do way too many things at the same time and then I don't do any of them very well. And I wasn't hearing my kids. I sometimes wasn't even remembering we had a conversation. So like for a while, I had to literally turn a computer away from me or turn my phone over or put the book down and close it. Like I had to give myself a signal that I was not looking at that even anymore, even if it was just for a 10-second interaction.
Yeah. No, my kids call me out on trailing off in my sentences, and it's funny because I've probably always done this, but I just assume they know what I'm going to say or they know what, and I think it's because my mind is already thinking about the next thing,
right?
And they're like, "Mom, you just completely stopped in the middle of a sentence." So,
do you ever go? Do they ever ask you something and you go, because you're buying yourself time because you really have you're not really paying attention. I do that, and they've gotten very funny about. They'll go, "You're doing that thing again. You're just saying and I'll say, "But now what I've kind of also realized is I have to be, especially the older they get. Like I have kids who come home at 3, and then I have another daughter. I have so many daughters. So the two middle, the high school and middle school boy come home right around 3, and then Clara comes home right after 4. And so my workday is not wrapped up at 3 o'clock and usually not even quite at 4 o'clock. Like I try to wrap up right around four for the most part. And then I'll go back to stuff a little bit later when they're busy doing their thing. Mm-hmm. And so I try to be wrapped up right around four so I can give them focus time. But sometimes I have to be like, hey guys, I need a minute. And I've tried to get better about proactively like holding up a hand and saying, I'm still working, shut my bedroom door. I will be out in 10 minutes and then I will give you my full attention instead of trying to do the whole, I'll be right. What? And where nothing is really getting done. And yes. I'm doing that. Like I'm not really working and I'm not really parenting. I'm just kind of in this weird, foggy middle ground.
Can I say something that's probably unpopular opinion?
Sure.
And that is that when my kids were say 2 and 4 or 3 and 5, I think it was totally possible for me to be half listening and half paying attention a good amount of the time. I'm not saying that that was best practice for all of the time, but the way they talked and the little stories they told and the way they interacted with me was they were physically down near the floor. They needed yeah. some validation and snacks and presence. And of course, at certain times in the day, I wanted to connect really, you know, really yeah. in a meaningful way with them. But it was a lot easier when they were that little to be like,
Didn't we just talk about this? Like not too long ago, I think we said like one of the harder things as they get older is that the way you yeah. pay attention to them has to change yeah. and you can't fake it anymore. I totally agree. I did the same thing when they were little. First of all, they need you all day long right. when they're little. Yeah. There's no way to not tune them out sometimes, right?
Yep.
But when they're 15 years old and it's your... You know, it's the 1/2 hour of focus time you might get that day before homework and chores and running yeah. around and all that stuff starts. And they have legitimate questions that require yeah. real answers. Like this has been a transition that I am still working on yep. because when they were little, it was easy to be like, and also they would just blah, 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 right. blah, 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 all exactly. day. I've actually had to have conversations with Clara before, and she's 10, where I had to say to her one day, like, Clara, I love when you talk to me, but sometimes I feel like you're just talking to hear yourself talk. Is that a real, like, do you have a real question for me? And she was like, no, I just like to hear myself talk. And I said, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Can you, is it okay if I don't answer?
Yeah.
Like, because I'm trying to take care of a couple of things and you're asking me just ridiculous. She asked me, I can always tell because she'll ask me a question that's just really dumb. Uh-huh. And I know it's just because she literally is in her head working through something mm-hmm. or like, I was the same way. I was a very talkative kid. And I would just say things just to say them. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even like I expected an answer. So she and I kind of have like almost like an arrangement now mm-hmm. where if she really needs me to answer something because it's a real, and I'm not saying I just tune her out the rest of the time. I'm just saying there are times when I'm not fully paying attention because it's just a steady
It's just part stream. Of her, how she it's processes. Babble.
Yeah. She's just thinking out loud.
Yeah.
And a lot of that then ends up being like, I would for a while take it very seriously, like I had to respond to every single thing she said in some way. And I think I'm just realizing now, like I probably don't. And she's, because I pointed that out now, she's getting better at kind of self, you know, self-regulating, which yeah. is important. Like she's going to be in middle school next year.
Yeah.
So.
That's great. I did yeah. remember when we talked about that. It was when yeah. we talked about sharenting or oversharing on social.
Yes.
And it was in the it wasn't in the context necessarily of listening to our kids, although we talked about that. It was in the context of we don't pause to take a photo or share something on social because the time with them is so much more focused. So you're yeah. right. We did. And I remembered where. Well, I have another kind of concrete tip, and it's another one that perhaps flies in the face of everything we're told. But if we're talking about finding productivity in small windows of time, I'm going to suggest that we harness the power of mobile, the phones in our hand. But I'm not talking about mindless scrolling. I'm talking about when we look at those, like when you make your list of those things you can do in 5, 10, or 15 minutes. We were talking about, you know, cleaning out the fridge or doing the dishes yeah. or vacuuming. But I think if you learn how to use the technology that's in your hand. There are things like you could renew a library book, like order a prescription, do your Amazon shopping cart. There are things you can do if you've got the right apps and you know how to use them and all your credit cards are linked up and like take that time to make sure your mobile life is really well organized, then I am all about knocking out 5 or 6 small things in a little window of time. Because what happens, it's not just because like I feel productive or whatever. What happens is those things come off my list for a longer, more focused period of time later. So whatever it takes, and those of you who are under like 37 years old. You don't need me to tell you this. Like, you've been mobile your whole life. Yeah. But there could be moms out there who are closer to our age, Megan, who like we do, we kind of prefer to sit at a desktop. And so I'm not saying you switch your whole life over to mobile, but if there are things, like you talked recently about your budgeting software, how that exists on your, you could quickly, if you make that list, like you were just talking about, and include some things you can do on your phone in a pocket of time where you're, you know, safely parked in the car or waiting on something. And then instead of the mindless scrolling, you're just knocking off a few of those things. It's so satisfying.
It is. And I will say for myself, my big challenge with that is that I tend to resist the learning curve of a new piece of technology, which can include apps. Mm-hmm. I don't even like downloading apps from the app store. Like, I had to train myself to get to the point where that wasn't a big hurdle for me. Because half the time, like, the payment information wasn't correct or whatever it was that was, like, always seemed to make it harder than it had to be. And I've really kind of, I wouldn't say I'm a super app focused person or an early adopter, but I've gotten to the point now where I can see the value of something that it would add to my life. And I can say, okay, that might mean I need to set aside 15 minutes the first time to figure out how to use it.
Yeah.
And then now it needs to become part. There's also no point having it on my phone if I can never find it.
Yeah.
Or if I have so many other apps that I don't see it. So it also has to become part of my life. But yes, there's so there you can really do so much on your phone. Mm-hmm. And I also think the more I get used to using my phone for truly helpful and productive things, mm-hmm. the less tempted I am to just like do really unproductive things on it. Just because it's in my hand. So like, do you ever feel like, yes. I have this thing in my hand and here I am sitting and I can't get up for whatever reason. I got a baby in my lap or I'm in bed or whatever it is. And you're not really supposed to be on your phone in bed. But if you've got the phone and there's nothing productive to do, you'll find something.
Yeah.
So it's good to have things that actually, I don't know, move the needle.
And I think it pairs perfectly with your suggestion of having that go-to list. And maybe it's like you make a little rule for yourself that before you open Instagram, you're gonna, whatever, check your bank balance, order that birthday gift and do this. I would often, in the old days when I had a short window, trick myself and just make the short list of two or three things. Like, do these three things first and then do whatever you want. Then chill out and scroll Facebook, but do these three things first. So I think you could do that with mobile as well.
Another one that came to mind as far as finding time is, it talks so much about energy patterns. I just think it's really important to understand like the times of day you feel tired, the times of day you feel really mentally sharp, because I think moms in particular fall into this trap of trying to like kids are asleep, so now I have to have me time or whatever it is, because this is the only time of day I'm going to get alone. And I 150% understand that. But if you're really tired, you're not necessarily even going to enjoy that time. And if you're trying to use it to burn the midnight oil and get work done, you're probably going to take longer to do things. You're not going to do it as well. Sometimes it's better just to go to bed, mm-hmm. or sometimes it's better just to get up, you know, mm-hmm. or sometimes it's better to sleep in, like whatever the thing is. And I think you do need to give your body a chance to adjust to changes, because we talked about this in a recent episode where we can sometimes almost like talk ourselves into thinking that.
Yeah, like lean into our natural tendencies to a default or to a fault.
Right, to a default. But I feel like if I'm going to sit down and veg in front of the TV, I at least want to be awake mm-hmm. to some degree. I want to be able to really enjoy that. Or maybe the point is that I need it to unwind and I want to be falling asleep by the end. Like whatever it is, I just don't want to go into something and then feel disappointed because I didn't get out of it what I set out to get out of it, which is maybe bonding time with my spouse or time to really absorb something or really get into a series or something. And then realize like that's time I really could have just spent in bed or in the morning. I'm not going to get up hours earlier than I need to unless I'm really going to use that time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so true. It reminds me of our conversation about FOMO, because sleep and FOMO are, I think, for a lot of moms directly related. This idea that I should go to bed, but there's a kid-free couple of hours that I am potentially missing out on. And when we talked about FOMO, we talked about like perceived FOMO, which is like, in theory, there's all of these things I could be doing with this time versus like actual, like, what am I actually missing out on? And I think what I'm hearing you say is like, it might just be sleep in this case. Right. Like it might just be the simplest solution is the right solution. Yeah.
Well, and the next day you might wake up feeling so much better mm-hmm. and then enjoy your morning more. I mean, there's just lots of ways to like, it's no point of slogging through your day exhausted just so you can get to the end and be exhausted without kids.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So. I think in terms of finding pockets of time, knowing your energy patterns and knowing what's coming is also really, you can almost be strategic about it. I mean, I definitely used to save certain things for the afternoon because they didn't require as much brain power and I could do them more automatically. And, you know, I could get the kids out of the house. And so once you know those energy patterns, then everything else we've just talked about finding pockets of time, pairing activities together, multitasking, all those things can then sort of fit in with those energy patterns.
Yeah, I like agreed. It.
Okay, well, we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about creating time. It's magic.
Out of thin air.
We are welcoming back America's Test Kitchen Kids as a sponsor today, and Megan and I are both such lifelong fans of America's Test Kitchen that we couldn't wait to try out the brand new Young Chefs Club from the America's Test Kitchen Kids division.
Yeah, I didn't even realize America's Test Kitchen had anything for kids, but it turns out they just launched this Young Chefs Club, and it's a monthly activity box that gets kids excited about cooking and eating. We talk a lot about dinnertime struggles on this show, and Sarah, you and I both know how getting kids involved can inspire them to eat better and try new foods. As a mom, that can be hard to figure out how to do sometimes, though, but this takes the guesswork out of it completely.
Yeah, and look, we're real moms with real families. We know your kids are probably not going to help with every single meal, but Young Chefs Club makes sure that at least once a month, your kids are in the kitchen with you, learning about food, doing hands-on activities, and connecting with you through cooking, which I love. Each kit includes kid-tested, kid-approved recipes, hands-on activities and experiments, and fun stuff like stickers, cookie cutters, and spices. Our first kit was taco truck themed, and we made chicken tinga tacos with pickled red onions. Plus, the kids got to build their own taco truck, which they loved.
Yeah, Clara and I had a good time putting that meal together as well. So if you're looking for ways to empower your kids ages 5 and up in the kitchen, check out Young Chefs Club from America's Test Kitchen Kids. Along with the monthly boxes, you'll get access to America's Test Kitchen Kids' full digital library of family-friendly recipes and online community.
Right now, America's Test Kitchen Kids has a special offer for our listeners. Get 10% off your first subscription box when you go to atkkids.com/themomhour and use the promo code ATKKIDS10 at checkout. Again, it's atkkids.com/themomhour and use promo code ATKKIDS10.
So Sarah, I haven't needed birth control in a while, but back when I did, one of the most annoying things was trying to remember to schedule an appointment or go to the pharmacy and fill a prescription while also juggling a baby or maybe a baby and a toddler or, you know, maybe a baby and a toddler and a preschooler. It's like just when I needed easy access to birth control the most was when it felt hardest to fit it into my life.
Right? It's like one more thing.
So that's why we're so excited to welcome Pill Club as a sponsor today. With Pill Club, you can renew your birth control prescription, switch birth control, or even try it for the first time all online. So even if you aren't sure where to start or don't know what you need at all, Pill Club can help. And it's a subscription service, so the pills just show up at your door when you need them. Most prescriptions are free with insurance or Medicaid, and it can be as low as $3.99 a month without insurance. Shipping is always free and discreet, and Pill Club schedules deliveries so you always have your next dose on hand before you need it.
I mean, thank goodness for inventions like this, right?
I know. It is revolutionary. So the Pill Club offers our listeners a new way to get birth control and a special care package with every delivery. So check it out at thepillclub.com/momhour. That's thepillclub.com/momhour to get your first birth control care package. Remember, thepillclub.com/momhour.
Okay, so for the second half here today, we really want to focus on making time for the things that are either missing from your life or that you want to prioritize more. And we are no longer talking about 10 and 15 minute increments. Yeah. We're really talking about bigger shifts here. And this is hard because if you ask all of our listeners out there, I bet most of them say, there is no more time. Like I am using it all. And so sometimes it takes like getting really honest with yourself or getting rid of something. And we're going to talk about that. So what's your first kind of tip if for creating time for the things that matter?
Well, I mean, it all comes down to habits, right? So there's almost certainly things that every person is doing, and this includes me, and I'm sure it includes you, that are not adding to your life in any positive way. And that's fine. Like if you feel like you're in a season of life right now where time is abundant enough, then fantastic. But when you start to feel pulled in all directions and frazzled and like you don't have enough time and you look at what you're actually doing, I can almost guarantee you there are some things you are doing that have become habitual that would take effort to replace with other things, but it's probably worth it. So like we talked about in the first half, going to bed earlier, or just even being more intentional about the way you interact with social media or watch which TV shows you're going to watch. Like, why am I watching TV right now? Am I watching it because this is a thing I want to do with another human, which is one motive, right? Or it's a thing that I just need to do because I really want to zone out, which is totally fine too. But as long as we know that's why we're doing it, then we need to create a habit around that. And that is something that takes time. And I think we'll get it. It's not something where you could say, today I'm going to have a habit. I'm going to kick the habit of being on social media, and I'm going to start a healthy new habit that's going to, you know, be exercise or whatever it is. Like, it doesn't happen like that, but just being mindful of how you're spending your time so that you can look really honestly, like you said, at it and go, what is the thing that needs to go and the thing that I can replace it with? Another thing I was just thinking of, and this can also kind of go back to that 5, 10, 15, 20 minute snippet thing. A lot of times we habitually fall into this pattern of doing things with those small snippets of time that don't really help us. Mm-hmm. But what if you did something like, when next time you had 10 minutes, you organize that utensil drawer because every time you open it, that spoon gets stuck.
Yes.
And then you have to wrestle with it. Or you've got that closet you open and something falls out or like hits you in the head every time. Like, imagine what friction you would reduce in a real way in your life, and then how much better and how much less annoyed you would feel. Mm-hmm. And we're all guilty of skipping that stuff. Yeah. I have a lingerie drawer in my bedroom right now that I apparently didn't put together correctly because the whole thing is falling apart. I mean, it's like, it looks like broken teeth right now. Like, and I know I need to put it back together. I know that. And it has to, because right now it's just creating so much hassle in my life. And it doesn't feel like a time, it feels like it'll take more time to fix it. But I guarantee you, I will feel better about that time when the thing works correctly and doesn't add 30 seconds of me struggling and grunting and sweating every time I want to put a pair of underwear on.
Totally.
Which is every day, by the way.
It turns out. Yes. Well, Megan, as you were talking, I was remembering when I very first met you, you were teaching a class for freelance magazine writers, and we talked a lot about finding time because everyone was a busy mom who wanted to also start a writing career. And didn't you say, or didn't you tell us that during the time you were ramping up your writing career, you just flat out gave up on certain things, right? Like, you didn't watch.
I gave up everything.
Yeah.
I didn't ever, like, I would come home and every minute I have, I spent writing or researching markets. And a lot of, you know, I was young and I was also in a transitional period of my life. That felt like an easier thing then than it might to someone who's gotten more habitual about stuff, or someone for whom it's not as urgent. Like, if you're looking to make a big change, sometimes big changes are necessary to make those changes, like to make that thing happen.
Yeah.
And not everyone's there, you know?
Right. No. And maybe you don't need to be there. Maybe little habit changes are all that you need, but I guess it's just worth pointing out that if we're talking about creating time in your schedule for something big, it could require bigger sacrifices, I guess is the point. I listen to the podcast Am Writing with Jess and KJ sometimes, and I've heard KJ say, do you want to have read a book or do you want to have written a book? And of course, they're the biggest advocates of reading. They're reading all the time, but there are certain phases of life where instead of picking up a book, maybe you're writing your book. Like, it is literally a choice between those two things. And I think evening TV watching is a great example because, like you said, it can be a meaningful part of your day, or it could be an hour and a half every single day that you could be using for something else. And I think for me, it is sometimes both. Like, it can go either way on that spectrum, but definitely worth thinking about for sure.
Yeah, and a lot of times, like, it's almost like, is this activity filler? Or is it like a meaningful activity?
Right.
Because filler doesn't really have a place if you feel like you don't have enough time in your day and there are things that are important to you that aren't getting done, you don't have time for filler. Yeah. I feel like end of story. You just don't. You may have time for filler if you are really happy with your job, happy with how your house looks, happy with how much time you spend with your friends and how much time you spend on your health. Then filler's awesome. Fill it up. Find as much. And this will ebb and flow depending on how old your kids are.
Yeah.
But if there's a big change you need to make and you are unhappy and the answer is this activity has to go. Mm-hmm. Like, we tend to cling so hard to something we don't need and it isn't helping us. And it's, so I'm not being like stern about it. And I've been there. I'm there probably right now where there are things that I could, but I'm working on it because I know the, how it looks on the flip side.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was just going to offer, shockingly, some thoughts about calendar planning because for me, when we're talking about bigger chunks of time or bigger rocks, bigger priorities, if they're on the calendar, I'm so much more likely to do them. And I wouldn't get granular with the calendar when we were talking about our 15 minute windows. I might do some other trick. Like I might have a reminder pop up on my phone or do other some other little trick. But when we're talking about really carving out a couple of hours a week for something or more, then I find it helps to put it on the calendar. I also find it helps to put it on someone else's calendar. So if you are in a marriage or a partnership, and let's say you've decided that time on your creative hobby is what you need more of, it can't just go on your calendar. It's got to go on the calendar of the person who's going to offer you that protected time or maybe whose life would be affected. If I decided that two nights a week, I don't want to watch TV with my husband because I'm going to be working on my novel, which is not true. I'm not working on a novel. I should probably let him know that. And that should probably that be a conversation because we are shifting. We're not creating time, even though we keep saying it. We are shifting priorities and shifting time. And often that requires a conversation with someone else and a physical blocking it off on the calendar so that you see it there. I think the other thing that does is it removes that nagging voice of, I should be doing this. I should be working on my novel. Yeah. I should be working on my novel. When you've got it blocked for 3 hours on Thursday evening, you've given yourself that time to look forward to. And then you also get to like not worry about it. So,
yeah. To add to that, and I love that, I do have certain things that are recurring on my calendar and they are non-negotiable. And if they're on my calendar, they're a million times more likely to get done. For me, either on my calendar, a mix of on my calendar and in my daily to-do list, which is often has a time associated with it. I don't like to put every single thing from my to-do list onto my calendar because then, like, if I have to move something for some unexpected reason, I feel like I failed somehow.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm
so
the same.
It's just those recurring things. It's like those recurring things, you know, every week, if you don't set aside time for, they're not going to happen. One of my problems that I have, which is why I'm trying something new right now, is that I would look at the calendar and I'd put the obvious stuff on. Like every week we're going to record. Great. That's on the calendar. I'll never forget. Well, truthfully, I wasn't going to forget anyway, because you're there and I know we're going to end up recording. Right. So I realized there was this whole other class of things that was never making it onto my calendar, because I didn't have any plan for how to use my time from a more big picture perspective. So like if someone said, hey, can you get together for lunch on Wednesday? I would just look at my calendar, go, nothing else there. Sure. Not realizing that by doing that, maybe I would have been better off using that time for something else. Right. So, it's kind of funny. I was talking, so we've talked about our business coach and I saw him personally and he asked me something. I said, I just feel like my workflow is a little out of control, especially because I'm running multiple businesses and still freelancing. And I said, he said, well, what determines like your workflow every day? And I said, well, it's usually deliver like stuff that has to get done. He said, well, how do you know it has to get done? And I was like, well, Sarah tells me it has to get done. And then he's like, well, that's okay. That can't be the way you run your business, right? Like you can't just wait for someone else to tell you this has to get done, because there are things that have to be in a long ranging way, part of your week. So I'm doing time blocking, and I know this is not a new concept ever. That's been written about a million times, but
it's maybe not a calendar. It might be new to one of our listeners. So definitely.
Okay. So it's not a calendar. It is a spreadsheet where I have, and the way I chose to do it, and people do it all different ways, I give each day just like a main focus, knowing that every single day I'm going to do a little bit out of everything. But like Sunday is like a family day. Monday is like a planning and housekeeping day. Like that's the day I kind of take care of stuff around my house, my budget, the different businesses and things I'm working on in different areas within those businesses each get a day. I have a day. Saturday is kind of just for fun. And then what I did was I blocked off 90-minute, mostly 90 minutes. Sometimes it's 30 if it's something like drink tea and look out the window. but for the most part, I'm blocking these in 60 to 90 minutes. And what was really helpful about that is, A, we talked earlier about getting used to like the transition of getting used to going from having like long periods of time to do stuff down to all you have is little short snippets.
Right.
I was in the reverse situation because I had gotten so used to only having 5, 10, or 15 minutes that I had a hard time managing the attention span needed to sit and work on something for longer. It would happen if I was in the zone, but I never planned for it. I wouldn't plan like, today I'm going to spend an hour thinking about like our sales strategy or like whatever that is. Like I just didn't make time for it and something else would always squeeze it out. So something else would come up or I'd hear a beep, beep, Sarah's voxing me and I'd listen or whatever it was. I would find lots of ways to not spend the focus time. So that was one thing.
Yeah.
The other thing was I would just find that I was only dealing with things that had to get done in any kind of focused way. And then all the other stuff that like I really want to do, it was like always on my mind, but I wasn't making a lot of progress toward it. Yeah. It was just like everything was happening in these little snippets. So now like on my day, on my planning and housekeeping day, I've got an hour set aside for learning, like for literally like keeping up on industry stuff. Like that's something I want to do more intentionally, but somehow never had the time. And I'm putting that in quotes because I did have the time. I just wasn't finding it. Like it wasn't, I was waiting for like the perfect moment to just show up in front of me. I'm also getting better about like having time set aside for phone calls because things like that, I would just put anywhere. Mm-hmm. So if I had a client or if it was like, I'm not really talking about personal calls so much, that would kind of go in my personal time, but then I would just schedule it whenever. And mm-hmm. the problem with that is if I'm doing something else and I have to stop to do a phone call and then I have to go back to the thing I was doing, I'm not like, I've lost focus. So far so good. It took me like 2 weeks of working on this thing to get it to where I feel pretty good about it. It's color coded. That took me a while to figure out how I wanted to code the colors. And what I finally landed on was that I have a color for things that are like personal development. Mm-hmm. I have a color for things that's blue. I have a color for things that are more like, pure leisure, mm-hmm. you know? I have one color for like recurring work. I have one color for meetings. And then I have one call for like new business, right? So stuff mm-hmm. that I'm doing to get more work. And now I can look at it and go, oh, it's pretty balanced. Like I can see that I'm kind of balancing my time between the work that I need to do to run things day to day, the work I need to do to get more work down the road. Mm-hmm. I've got plenty of flex time built in. I've got lots of personal time and lots of personal development time and lots of family time. So, but it took like, I mean, I've been working on this thing for a while.
Yeah.
Well, so
one thing that occurs to me as you talk is this could really work for anybody from full-time employment in a traditional office all the way to somebody whose time is largely unstructured due to being at home with little kids, because it has more to do with priorities and not to do with appointments, which is, you know, your calendar is more about like the appointments. It's kind of external. It's the rest of the world expecting you to show up here or take your kid here. Whereas this is more about blocking your priorities almost by theme. It's been fun to watch you like wrestle with it because you aren't the more structured among us, but it's the structure.
But I need it,
structure,
it won't just happen.
Right. And in the structure, your freedom and your creativity will actually probably do better with that.
I agree.
Just like our kids. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is more like what you said, like the way you put it, because I was kind of wrestling between like, what's the difference between a time block and a calendar? And like you said, the calendar is the contract I have with other people to do certain things. This is with me. Like, this is my agreement with myself that this is how I'm going to spend my time. So that to make sure that I actually make time for all of these things. And I think this could be so helpful to someone who's transitioning from having long stretches of time down to short periods, someone who's going from being a stay-at-home mom to being a working mom or vice versa, because the way you approach time changes. And as it changes, you almost need something to wrangle you, or you just feel like you could do it whenever.
Yeah, totally.
Or never, or you feel like you could do it never. Like,
totally.
And neither of those are great ways to approach time, because neither is true.
Well, I want to say something about the actual tool you created. Yours is in Google Sheets. Yeah. Because this is something I'm realizing I'm guilty of. Because I structures and calendars and lists, it all comes really naturally to me. And a lot of it exists in my head or, you know, in my notebook. And what I found is I've used that as an excuse to not take the final step in actually documenting something and then printing it out and having it in front of me. So I guess this is just a vote for, even if you, if you're naturally organized or you're naturally structured with your time, I could see myself liking the idea of time blocking and kind of sketching it out one day and then forgetting to look at it or forgetting to like really have it in front of you. I think that's something we've both learned from Zach, from the business coach we're working with, is like, we can talk about this stuff all day, every day. We do. We have a podcast. We, but that last step of holding yourself accountable to the system that you create, maybe it's because I've spent a lot of my work life creating systems for other people. So then when I create them for myself, I think it's done. I'm like, oh yeah, I like that idea. I like my schedule. But then I forget to truly, truly have it in front of me and execute it.
Well, remember a long time ago when we were talking about, I think it was when I was doing that yoga challenge or something. And you were like, how are you going to figure out, like, how are you going to fit this in? And I said, well, I'm not doing anything else. Like for like the last week, all I have thought about whenever I'm not actively doing work that is advanced, like advancing things that have to get done, all I've thought about is this workflow that I'm creating. It takes time. And sometimes it takes ultimate focus. Like sometimes you have to just hit pause on the stuff that you're doing that's not getting you where you want to go and put the time into creating something that will. And by focusing so hard on it, there's no way I'm not going to do it now. I've showed it to you. I've showed it to Zach. It's on my, like posted on the little bulletin board above my desk. I have it on a tab on my computer. Like I have a printed version that I'm carrying around so that anytime I go to make an appointment, I have to check, does that fit? And if it doesn't fit, I'm not putting the appointment there. Like it's not, I'm not going to put a phone call. I mean, later, once I have it habitualized and stuff, I'll be able to be more flexible. But right now, it'll just go out the window. So there's, I can't do that, right? So sometimes it does take that kind of
focus, like fixing, it's fixing the lingerie drawer so that the rest of the time you go to get your underwear, it's smooth. So that's what you, you know, you've put the time in. I really like it. Well, this is like a tip in a totally different direction, but it is one that has helped me. And that is, if you are looking for bigger blocks of time to create them, don't wait until finding childcare is past overdue and then you can't find a sitter and your kids have never been left alone with someone else. I think one of the best things I ever did was proactively get a once a week sitter for 3 hours on the schedule as a regular thing. And that was in a time where I wasn't really making a lot of money from any work I was doing. I was mostly a stay-at-home mom and it felt kind of unnecessary to have a built-in sitter once a week. But I guess I'm advocating for doing that before it feels like you're dying or you're drowning. Yes. And that that could include, it doesn't have to be for work or a creative hobby. It could be to do your errands or your phone calls. But if you can arrange, and if a paid sitter is not in the budget, we've talked about things like childcare swaps, or, you know, maybe it's your gym that has a childcare, but putting those things in place before you think you need them. I think this is, can be particularly hard for fully stay at home moms. If you're working in any capacity, your kids have probably gotten used to some kind of alternate childcare. And so to add a couple hours on for you doesn't seem like that big a deal. But if you are a fully stay-at-home mom, it can feel like a big deal financially, emotionally, justifying-wise. It just feels like a roadblock or a hurdle. And from experience, I can say that doing it in a proactive way instead of a reactive way will actually give you more time. Like this is one of the few tips where like you will actually have the gift of 3 hours that you then can play around with. All these tips we've offered, you can play around with how to use that time. And it could be for a million different things, self-care, exercise, errands. But if you have it and you have that, that childcare option or solution, and it's a recurring thing on the calendar, it's just a gift.
Yeah, it really is. I would also add that if you're in one of those situations where you've got a kid who's in like afternoon preschool for 2.5 hours and it's super frustrating because no one can get anything done in 2.5 hours and you feel like you spend half that time in the car, looking to see if they have like an add-on on either end, morning or afternoon. Like I remember feeling like the difference between a 2.5 hour preschool program versus 4.5 hours. If I added on the 2 hours after or before was like night and day, like so different. I was able to just relax a little bit. It takes transition time between the drop off and the pickup to, you know, really get into your day.
Agreed. So, that's a great tip.
I have one more thing I want to talk about. Okay. And this is something, you know, I know we've mentioned before, like the whole question of, is it urgent or is it important? Mm-hmm. And I think that was something that was like, maybe Dwight D. Eisenhower was like the first one to kind of like.
Yeah. I mean, I remember this from working in business back in the day. Yeah. I don't even know where it came, where I learned it, but.
Well, what I hadn't been as aware of until more recently was that in the book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, he actually creates like a tool for that, which mm-hmm. really helped me. So let's say you've got like four quadrants, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like in a square, right? On the top, you've got urgent and not urgent. Mm-hmm. On the left, you've got important and not important. Mm-hmm. So quadrant one, which is up in the upper left-hand corner, is urgent and important. Quadrant two is in the upper right-hand corner, not urgent, but important. Mm-hmm. Quadrant three is urgent, not important. Quadrant four, which is on the lower right, it's not urgent and not important. So we all know that like not urgent, not important stuff is out. Like if,
right.
if no one's asking you to do it right now and it doesn't matter if you do it anyway, then don't do it, right? Where it gets a lot more tricky is when things feel urgent, mm-hmm. which would be any, basically I look at that as anything where someone is seems to be demanding your attention like right now.
Yep.
So urgent and not important might be like the school is calling. Mm-hmm. And they want you to, like, your kid forgot their lunch. Mm-hmm. That's an example. Well, if it's not important to you whether your kid eats hot lunch that day or whether it's actually important to you that your kid learns how to manage their own, mm-hmm. you know, be responsible for their own lunch, it's probably not important that you do anything about it.
Right.
But sometimes because it's urgent, yeah, we feel like we have to do something.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. And obviously, we all need to do things that are urgent and important. If the school calls and your kid just broke their arm, you're running out the door.
right.
But what I thought was so interesting was that what I learned from kind of looking at it laid out like this is you actually want to spend most of your time in quadrant two, mm-hmm. which is not urgent, but important.
That's
and the
really
reason
hard
is because
for me.
This it's so hard, right? But the stuff that moves the needle, the stuff that gets you to your big goals, typically are not the urgent things. You might need to do the urgent and important things because it's an emergency. It's yeah. literally like, my tooth really hurts. I need a root canal like tomorrow. Like, take care of that, right?
Yeah.
But what if it's something that feels urgent but really isn't important? Then you don't want to do that. And most of us don't want to live our lives in emergency yeah. mode either. So the more time you spend doing stuff before you have to, not urgent, maybe getting your teeth cleaned, mm-hmm. but important because mm-hmm. like eventually you might have a root canal otherwise, like that's where you want to spend your time. And that is hard. I think because you're detail oriented, you tend to spend a lot of time. Like, I think for me, I spend more time probably with stuff that's important. Well, I'm trying to think how I would spend my time. Talk about yourself, because I know it's really hard for you not to knock stuff off your list.
Yeah, so that's what I want to do. What I want to do, what I tell myself is if I get all of this, I'm going to call it urgent. It's not like emergent, yeah. but it's like it has a deadline to it.
Right.
And if I get it off my list, so that would be the urgent and the not important. Well, or not important. It's not urgent. That's what it is. It's probably not urgent.
Maybe that's the problem because it's perception.
Yeah.
Stuff seems to be urgent that's not.
Yeah, I create urgency around things that are not.
Right.
That's what I do.
And maybe I create importance around things that are not, right? So I
yeah.
think that things, yeah. So I think that things are really, like, I make things that are important, I move them to the top of my urgency, but actually if I just took care of them in a more steady and slow way, mm-hmm. then I would actually get more done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like, for you, maybe for you, it's like quadrant three. It's urgent stuff that's not important. Like
yeah.
it's stuff that
yeah.
even if it didn't get done, probably wouldn't make that big of a difference or it probably
exactly.
doesn't need to get done as quickly as you feel
exactly.
like it needs to get done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
somebody
and
else could do it. That's what I'm
yeah.
working with Zach on my individual coaching is, do I need to be doing this? And do I need to be doing this at the level of detail that I'm doing
yeah.
it?
Well, and that's a whole other, you know, conversation that we could have for days about that. But I would encourage people to check that out. If you just Google urgent, not urgent,
yeah.
you know, quadrant or table, you'll see it. And when I saw that, it really made me think harder about the way I perceive tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And often I think that perception is incorrect. And that's where, you know, it's my natural inclination to want to think big picture, important, grand scale, mm-hmm. paired with like still having things pinging me and not knowing where those things should go.
Mm-hmm. I know we're going to wrap up, but at one point when I was working for a CEO on different projects, we actually had colored folders for these four things, and things would go like actual paper, like manila file folders.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so when I would prep things for him, or when we had projects we were working on, there was an urgent and important folder and an urgent, but not important. There were four folders, and it was like red, orange, yellow, green.
And maybe the first step to that, I'm sure, was him knowing what actually is important to him and what's not.
Yeah, exactly.
And, and like, what goal is he trying to actually accomplish?
And then you have to, when you're reaching for the quadrant four folder and saying, I'm going to now spend my time on things that are not urgent and not important. It's like, oh wait, am I like, is this right. the best use of my time? Or can I, can this stay at the bottom of the pile for another day?
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And things do move around. So something that right now is neither urgent nor important probably will never become more important, but may become more urgent, you know? So it's like, it's just a tool. It's not like a religion.
Yeah.
But it's a way to look at the way you're spending your time and see if it matches up with where you're trying to go.
Yep. No, I've always found that helpful too. So thank you for reminding me. Okay, guys, I don't know if we helped you find time or make more time, but we sure had a lot to say about it, and we would love to hear from you. Before we wrap up, we are bringing back our Cue It Up segment. That's where we talk a little bit at the end of each show about an episode from our archives that you might want to go listen to next. And we kind of spent the summer using Cue It Up to talk about some of our friends' podcasts, which was really fun. But now we're back to a self-serving Cue It Up, where we want to point you back into our vast archives. And today I picked a two-part series. It was actually from this month, 2 years ago, same time of year. So September 2017 is when it was from. And it's called Sitters and Caregivers. And there's two parts. Part one is about finding good sitters and caregivers. Part two is kind of about the relationship you have with your sitters and caregivers and that your kids have. It's episodes 119 and 120 in the archives. I will link them up in the show notes for this episode, but you can also just scroll down wherever you're listening, go back 2 years and look for sitters and caregivers. I think those would be kind of a nice complement to this episode, because boy, do those sitters and caregivers help us find more time.
Sure do.
All right, Megan, everybody, this was fun, and we will be back with you guys soon.
Talk soon.